Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be drilling down into a number of UK company reports. This morning, we're in the midst of earnings season. We've got a lot of updates from the Christmas trading period. And to go through the numbers, we're kindly joined by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast this morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Yes, very well, thank you. Looking through these numbers this morning, I mean, yourself, Alan, how are you finding the start to the new year?
It's a very busy start, and we're seeing the FTSE, we were saying just now, weren't we, that the FTSE is, you know, about 100 points off its all-time high, so really pushing higher this morning, a lot of stocks really pushing ahead, and that's really good to see at the start of the year, where I think there was a lot of concern over, or pre-Christmas, and as to how the year would start. But of course, as you said at the start, we're now seeing trading statements being released by companies, particularly trading statements from retailers covering the key Christmas trading period. And I mean, so far, you know, what we're seeing isn't too bad.
It's not too bad. I mean, if you regular listeners to the podcast will remember the discussions that we had at the end of last year, that we could actually see a situation where the FTSE 100 breaks two all-time highs whilst the UK economy's in a recession. Now, recession in the UK hasn't been confirmed yet, and we've actually had some retail data out for December, of course helped by the World Cup, but that was particularly buoyant. So we're by no means confirmed to be in a recession, but certainly there's been a downbeat tone to the economy. But of course, the FTSE 100 isn't a representation of what's happening here in the UK. But that all-time high on the FTSE 100, Alan, sits at 78.77, so roughly about 140 points away from where we are now. I mean, looking at the way that this market's performing, I mean, is that something we could breach, Alan, do you feel, in the first quarter of this year?
Well, looking at the momentum so far, I think if the collection of trading statements that we've seen so far this morning, of course, we're hearing from the insurers that business is tough there. Direct Line, of course, has axed its dividends, so that's that will have an impact on that sector. We've seen some falls across sector this morning, but certainly, because of course, the FTSE 100 is represented largely by dollar earners. That is a reflection on prospects for the global economy, of course, driven by the dollar, and of course, commodities too. And I think there is a general feeling that looking sort of as the markets do 6 to 9 months ahead, looking towards the end of the year, we're going to see economies start to pick up. We'll probably have to deal with a recessionary period in the meantime. If the UK falls into a recession, I don't expect to see too much of an impact on the FTSE 100. So I think there's a reasonable chance. If I were a betting man, I'd probably place some money on the FTSE index at least equaling that high and possibly pushing through and setting a new one.
Indeed. So, I mean, one of the drivers that we're seeing this morning is company earnings. So, well, we've had a raft of data out from JD Sports, Direct Line down 28% due to bad weather claims being much higher than expected. But we're going to be looking, Alan, at Sainsbury's and Barrett's from the FTSE 100 and their numbers. But let's start with Sainsbury's. A record Christmas period for them. The shares are off slightly. What's been happening there?
Yeah, Sainsbury's have had a pretty good period. A solid performance, actually, because the problem with Sainsbury's from an investor's standpoint, Sainsbury's are kind of stuck in the middle. We've got your Waitrose and M&S at the top end, and then for the discounters, of course, we have Tesco, which is although the prices are fairly equal, it's got far more control over the market because it's got the largest market share. And then, of course, we've got Aldi and Lidl continuing to expand and eat away, excuse the pun, at the grocers. And they now have a combined market share between them of 16%, up from 11% 5 years ago. So slowly but surely, some of the more traditional retailers are seeing their margins eroded, and they're seeing customers move away to the low cost retailers. And of course, in a high inflation environment, it's a perfect opportunity for Aldi and Lidl to further consolidate on that position. So Sainsbury's have got a really tough job on their hands, and the fact that they come in with this performance in what's regarded as the squeezed middle is a testament indeed to their marketing strategy and their pricing. And I think they have to be clearer on this strategy going forward, because as the discount retailers continue to nibble away below them, and the premium retailers continue to retain their market share above them, it's really just Sainsbury's facing Tesco's at the end of the day. And that's going to be tough because Tesco's have the largest market share. So a great performance for Sainsbury's. Shares are down 1.6% on the day, and of course over the past year they've come up, and we're about midway. Of course, shares hit the low of £1.70 back in October last year, so they've recovered well. Whether they can retain this performance throughout the year remains to be seen. For me, if I were holding the shares, I'd probably stick with them, but I think going forward, I think unless they have a rehash of their marketing strategy, it's going to be really tough for them.
I mean, when we're looking at the sales numbers, of course, record sales numbers, but that's largely due to price inflation. Volumes were pretty flat. Is the focus going forward for Sainsbury's and indeed the other grocery companies really going to be on margins? And is that where investor attention is going to be going through 2023?
Well, I think that there are a number of conditionals in there. If inflation is now under control or can be brought under control, and we start to see a fall, and if we are in recession, but we're set to come out of recession, say, even quarter two, quarter three, then I think Sainsbury's might be able to bridge that gap through discounting and using their own brand in-house, discounting those heavily to compete or even undercut the likes of Aldi and Lidl. So I think if they can continue to do that, but really I think Sainsbury's prospects rely largely on how quickly the UK economy in particular can recover from recession, because they are in this middle area, they're in this middle ground. In a low inflation environment, that middle ground's always been very popular, and they've always been able to serve it well and retain market share. But the longer the recession goes on, the longer the high inflation environment continues, the tougher Sainsbury's is going to find it. So I'd probably hold the shares if I were holding the shares, but I certainly wouldn't be buying the shares now.
Yes, yeah. I mean, just looking at their free cash flow, that was better than expected. So a strong performance over the last period, but there is some question marks going forward around the state of the UK economy, how that's going to affect Sainsbury's for the next year. Now, moving on now, Alan, to another company that's inextricably linked to the UK economy. That's Barratt Developments, the house builder. You know, if you look at the share price of Barratt's, and not only Barratt's, it can be any house builder. They had a torrid 2022. Doesn't look as though the picture in the property market's going to improve anytime soon, but it may not be as bad as previously thought. So we've got numbers out from Barratt's this morning. Alan, what do they look like?
Yeah, so the numbers from Barratt's are pretty strong. I mean, the problem that Barratt faces is cost inflation, and that has been attacking margins for all the house builders ongoing. Some have actually a place there, or bought materials or acquired enough materials to keep them going at pre-inflation prices. But of course, that can't continue. The outlook for the housing market, there is expected to be a correction, which is very healthy. I mean, you know, markets need corrections. Markets need to have that reset button. But of course, it does mean the companies involved in the middle will find it tough. So for Barratt's, first-time buyers, of course, are facing a challenging environment at the moment. So from a strategy standpoint, looking forward, Barratt's is probably going to be focusing on the middle market, looking for people that maybe are looking to move house, but are looking to secure as much value in that move as they can. And that's where Barratt comes in. It has a fair amount of 3 and 4 bedroom homes in select environments on its books. It also, during the year, undertook the acquisition of Gladman Development. This is a company that already have very strong margins, it looks as though that's been a good acquisition for the company. It's also been able to reduce the number of land purchases it's made because, of course, given the expected correction in the housing market, land prices, of course, are likely to decrease in line with house prices. So that will mean that Barratt's will have a war chest at some point to be able to go back into the market and pick that land up at a lower cost. There are a number of positive issues for the group. If we look at the share price performance, the stock hit that low in October last year, but we've seen a steady build in the share price since then. And again, shares are slightly off again this morning. We've seen, of course, that there's a sort of a 1% drop, but the stock is starting to come back given the strong start for the FTSE 100 this morning. So I think Barratt's strategy wise, they've got it about right. But of course, I think again, how long is this inflationary period going to last? Have we seen the worst of inflation? Looking forward, will Barratt's have a sufficient war chest to be able to continue to acquire its land and add to its land bank at these lower prices? And of course, in the meantime, sustain sales of house prices to that middle market we were talking about with the detached 3 to 4 bedroom homes. So again, probably from my standpoint, if I had the shares, I would continue to hold them. I wouldn't be buying them at the moment. I would look to see what happened. But certainly, the share price performance since October last year should give existing holders some encouragement.
So when we're looking at the UK housing market, Alan, and the house builders, there is a consensus building that we're going to be seeing downside in UK house prices. But we've seen, you know, a minor rally. It hasn't been a huge rally. We saw a very sharp sell-off and a minor bounce back from those lows. Do you feel now, when you're looking at the house builders, I think I've seen figures of a 6 to 9% reduction in the average value of a UK property next year. Do you think that drop is largely now priced in to the UK house builders? Or do you think as these figures start to roll out from the likes of Halifax and Nationwide on the UK housing prices, that we see further downsides in the house builders?
The UK housing market is unusually resilient because, of course, we're an island, we're a finite territory per se. And certainly, given where the house builders own their land banks, the land is owned in areas that are of strategic importance in regard to the local economy, access to cities, and so on and so forth. So there's an awful lot that goes into buying those land banks. Go back to my early point that markets look 6 to 9 months ahead. So we're probably seeing you know, the lows that we saw in October last year probably reflect something of what was expected in the numbers that we've seen today and the forecasts. So of course, Barrick's got a very strong order book going forward still, 2.5 billion. Although, of course, December a year ago, it was nearly 4 billion. So, of course, there is a fall per se. But I would suggest that the modest fall in the share price this morning, that's largely in line with expectations. So the share price performance since October last year, I think reflects that. So there's been no nasty shock today. Of course, that isn't to say we won't see a sudden dramatic downturn going forward. And of course, if Putin continues to prosecute his war in the Ukraine and continues, and we see energy inflation continue to drive inflation overall, then it could push it further into the future, and that could have a detrimental effect in the short term on prices. But I'm kind of sensing that we're probably bumping along the bottom at the moment. Bullish investors might want to consider jumping in now, but I would probably keep my powder dry and maybe look to move in by the end of quarter one.
Indeed. And we're going to have other house builders reporting in the coming days and weeks, and I'm sure that's going to be something we're going to be covering on the podcast as those figures come in, to see if there's any correlation. There usually is, but the extent of that correlation between Barrett's and the activity at other house builders. So we're going to move on now, Alan, to a company we've discussed on the podcast previously, Blencow Resources. I understand there's been quite a bit happening there.
Yeah, Blencow have announced a significant development today. Shares are well up this morning, up 9%. But I mean, in comparison to the highs back in November last year of just under 7p, we're still very modestly valued with a market capitalization of 9 million. So Blencow has its owner, 100% owns the Orem Cross Graphite Project in Uganda. Uganda is a benign political environment and very pro mining companies and mining projects, mining project development. And that's been made very clear today with the announcement by Blencow Resources. So Blencow have gone through the process, as of course you do with a mining project. The Orem Cross project covers some 2,000 square kilometres. It's a huge area, and the testing work and the metallurgical work and what's called the pre-feasibility study has all taken place within an area less than 1% of the total size. So it could be repeated many times over, given that the flake graphite, for which Orem Cross is famous, is literally in places sticking out of the ground. As with all these processes, we've gone through the pre-feasibility study, established a very strong valuation for the project, to the point where recently the company was able to raise further funds from existing investors. The company raised 750,000 at 4p per share with three existing investors. Jangada Mines increased their holding from 2% to 9.5%, and existing shareholders Rab Capital and JUB Capital invested to retain their existing 10% and 8.5% shareholdings respectively. So that was a hugely significant endorsement for the quality of the project, and that was done because the interest had been expressed by a potential strategic party in China called Jilin, and Jilin have the company has over 30 years experience in graphite processing, and today Blencow announced that the Ugandan government had approved a landmark one-off permit for it to export bulk sample graphite from Orem Cross for final testing by Jilin in China. So that's a huge step for the company. It's hugely significant, and it also really endorses the maturity of the relationship with Jialin and, of course, with Blancow. So the net present value of Orem Cross is $482 million based on a 14-year mine life. And, of course, this is drilled already from a tiny portion of the overall size of the project. This test is hugely significant. Obviously, the Ugandan government have totally supporting Blancow through this process. But there's an offtake agreement that will be in place, no doubt, with Jialin. And I expect to see a lot more progress in quarter one this year. But certainly the shares have jumped on the news this morning. We're up 9%. But as I say, still a long way off those year highs. And I think given the relatively late stage the Orem Cross graphite project is now, a 9.2 million market capitalization is very modest given the progress that's been made and really the value that's that should now be attributed to Orem Cross.
Indeed. And, just having a look and, being a follower of battery metals, last year was very much dominated by the story in lithium, but it's starting to evolve now. And there's lots of talk about the need for graphite. So, any company involved in that is likely to get the attention of a certain sector of the market as we move towards a point where there's huge supply deficits for not only lithium, but, the likes of graphite, as the number of EV produced, increases and really, ratchets up the demand for metals such as graphite. So it's going to be an interesting year for Blancow Resources going forward. So we're just going to finish off now, Alan, with a company I'm looking here. It's the best performing stock in London today, up. It's moving quite a bit, but between sort of 40 to 50% on the day, it's Deltic Energy. What's driving that move?
Well, Deltic Energy have a portfolio of assets in the North Sea. If you go to their website, they've got a very good website. And if you travel up the East Coast, as I've done on many occasions through Hull, you can see a lot of the oil rigs actually operating just offshore there as you look out towards the sea. So they have assets in the southern North Sea, which is basically the area referred to off Hull, and of course for the central North Sea, which is the area that's off the shore from Aberdeen. They have a portfolio of assets across these regions and farming agreements with a number of companies, and also the company last year participated in the 33rd round of North Sea licensing. Also worth noting that the company raised a significant amount of money late in September last year. It raised £15 million to invest into its assets and projects going forward. The flagship asset at the moment is no doubt the Pensacola exploration well, where Deltic has a 30% stake, the well is being drilled by Shell, and Shell announced, or the company announced this morning, that Shell had encountered gas in the reservoir and has recommended to the joint venture, that is Shell at 65%, Deltic at 30%, and OneDias at 5%, that a full well testing program be undertaken. So that's a very strong sign. Of course, the chief executive of Deltic, Graham Swindle, said they're very pleased to have encountered these hydrocarbons at this intermediate stage, and they will update the market as and when that's completed. So why is it significant? Well, shares are up 48%, as you say, John. They're the leading riser this morning. Company's got a market cap on the back of that at 36.7 million. But I think in terms of valuation, bear in mind this 15 million was raised last September at 3.5p. It gives you some idea of the potential and nascent value, I think, that's still within the project. Of course, investors in that fundraising saw the stock subsequently fall, and had a canny investor or canny investors or eagle-eyed investors been watching this, you could have picked the stock up a few days ago for just 1.98p. So again, great news from Deltek, a big jump this morning. But you know, from an investor's standpoint, that fundraise was done at 3.5p last year. A lot more to come, I think, and the indications that hydrocarbons have been encountered by Shell this morning is a huge plus. But Deltek isn't a one-trick pony. Take a look at the website and you'll see the other assets that the group has, and I think they offer an excellent potential for growth going forward this year.
Yeah, certainly that sector, the junior oil and gas explorers, is certainly coming back into vogue to some extent. Deltek's one of many AIM-listed companies that's starting to get the attention from investors again, and for good reason. You know, there's a hell of a lot going on. Mm. Of course, you know, we won't be using oil forever, but we will be using it for the foreseeable future. And there's a hell of a lot of value in the regions that these companies are operating in. So definitely well worth having a look if you do like to look at junior oil and gas explorers. So to finish off, we're just going to run through a couple of dates that we've got coming up for UK Investor Magazine. Events on the 22nd of February, we've got a virtual conference, and then on the 8th of March, we have our regular instalment of the Investment Trust Conference. We're going to be presenting and hosting a number of London listed investment trusts. So do put those dates in your diary. So a recap of the companies we discussed today. First of all, was Sainsbury's, which had a ticker of SBRY. It was then Barratt Developments with a ticker of BDEV. We then spoke about Blencow Resources with a ticker of BRES. And we finished off, of course, with Deltek Energy, which has a ticker of DELT. So, Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks very much, John.
And thank you very much to you all for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.